Most kids who are raised in dysfunctional households become pathological caretakers. I'm no exception. It's part of my genetic makeup to help anyone and everyone, especially because I know what's hurting them. There are a few problems with having this kind of excessive compassion, though. First, those who are wired this way often think of others, almost obsessively, before themselves, noticing everyone else's problems while denying their own. I did this all the time, for years. I remember being at day camp one summer, and as I walked past the nurse's station, I noticed a sick boy sitting with his head between his legs. Down around his head swirled a dark cloud, the telltale sign that an entity had attached to him. I knew that if I looked closer, I'd be able to see its form. My heart stopped, and I was desperate to run to this poor boy's side. "I know what's really wrong with you," I wanted to say. "I need you to know I'm here for you." I hadn't even sought out help for my own problems, yet all I wanted to do was save him. Second, when a pathological caretaker looks for someone to care for, they tend to seek out the most damaged, neediest people they can find. That was my specialty. I lived with a woman who was desperate for attention, so I was used to that kind of behavior, and I sought out more of it. But the friends I found and surrounded myself with didn't just seem troubled. A lot of times, I knew they really were troubled, not just by trauma or grief, but because of the terrible entities they'd attracted. By the time I got to middle school, I was exhausted. So many of my friendships flamed out in a destructive cycle that involved me trying too hard to help the other person, but in the end, them running all over me. My best friend was named Anne, and her mom smoked too much pot and paid more attention to her boyfriend than she did to her own daughter. Anne was depressed because of it, so she spent more time out with me than she did at home. Then one day, she stopped returning my calls. I hadn't done anything to anger or alienate her. She'd just decided to move on to a new group of friends. I finally decided at the age of 13 that it would just be easier if I detached from everyone and kept my distance. So I transformed myself from the caring, supportive friend to all into a complete loner, the weird kid walking down the halls, dressed in black with my head down and my hair in my eyes. Everyone now gossiped about how strange I'd become, but they all stayed away. As high school approached, though, the world changed. It was the 1990s and piercings, tattoos, and black Doc Martens were everything. I listened to Alice in Chains and Faith No More and loved the movie The Craft, which was about four high school girls who happened to be witches. Suddenly, being different was cool. My peers now thought I was mysterious and alternative, and I found a posse of fellow weirdos who welcomed me with open arms. Within that group, I met a boy named Kevin. He was a flannel-wearing, guitar-playing, dark, broody boy who was into drugs, and I developed a huge crush on him right away. We soon became best friends, though all the while I wanted more. Kevin was deeply troubled, and I fell right into my old role of caretaker. I wanted to do everything I could to save him from his self-harm and self-loathing. Between my abusive upbringing and my natural ability, pathological caretaking was comfortable to me, and I felt my only value was to do everything I could for everyone, especially for people I thought I loved. But even though Kevin and I were as close as could be, I didn't feel right telling him what I thought was at the root of all his problems or how to fix them. I just wanted to be there for him, all the time, and revel in his darkness. Misery loves company, right? He was burdened with entities. Of course he was. But my mom's cold rejection had taught me to shut my mouth about all that. Sure, being edgy was great and all, but even goth teenagers had limits. Like most people with entities, Kevin couldn't change. He was stuck in a well of unhappiness and couldn't figure out how to climb out. Nor did he want to, either. I think he accepted being dysfunctional and unhappy and wore it like a beat-up leather jacket. I could see entities around him and I realized they were doing something harmful to him, but I still didn't understand the extent of their powers. I hadn't yet figured out what motivated them, or exactly what particular brand of havoc they could wreak in which particular ways. All I knew was that Kevin was plagued more than most people, and that drew me to him like a moth to a flame. Our friendship was intense but rocky. It followed a pattern. He'd get a girlfriend, and I'd become livid. In retaliation, I'd get a boyfriend, and when he found out, he'd fly into a jealous rage. The back-and-forth madness soon became too much, and Kevin and I stopped talking. Then my stepfather, who'd endured my mother's craziness and who I loved because of that and so many other things, died suddenly from a heart attack when I was 16. I approached Kevin, begging him to be someone he wasn't able to be, a sane, compassionate man who could help me through my grief. I needed him to dig deep, to show me some sympathy, but quickly I realized he wasn't capable. This ended our friendship for good. Kevin called me years later when I was in college. "I dropped out of school," he said. "I went to rehab because I was addicted to pills. I'm trying to stay clean and sober now." We hadn't spoken in over 4 years, but hearing his voice in this news made me so sad. Deep down, I'd always known this was going to be Kevin's path.